in the matter of State versus Isaiah Bell. May we please have appearances.
Your Honor, Isaac White Jr. for Mr. Isaiah Bell. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Paul Hines-Solis, Assistant Prosecutor on behalf of the
Counsel.
For the record, Your Honor, is Ronald Hunt on behalf of the Bell firm of Hunt and just gave a most quick.
Welcome, Counsel. All counsel. As you know, we've narrowed the issue today to a single issue, and that is if a grand jury asks whether a less serious charge should be given, whether a less serious offense should be considered, should the prosecutor give a charge on the lesser included offense, why or why not, and what standards should apply. The other matters that have been presented, we have your papers on them. We'd ask you to focus your argument on this issue alone. Mr. Wright, please proceed.
Thank you, Chief Justice, Justices of the Supreme Court. As the Court well knows, this is an issue of first impression in the state. Whether upon inquiry or request, the state is obligated to charge or instruct the grand jury on lesser offenses. The defendants have answered that question in the affirmative. And the reason why is because the law in New Jersey is longstanding on the effect and the power of the grand jury. For over a century, the grand jury has been known as an independent body, one that has its investigatory powers that is, how should I say, extensive. In this state, the grand jury is able to investigate on its own suggestion. And in this case, and I don't want to belabor the court regarding the facts of this case, but what had happened during the grand jury, and the first grand jury, is that the prosecutor, in putting the case forward factually, there were some questions before the grand jury or from the grand jury as to whether or not the victim was stabbed with a knife. And in those questions, the grand jury was specifically asking the prosecutor whether there were lesser included offenses. It was couched inartfully, but based on several questions, ultimately the prosecutor decided to say to the grand jury, listen, there are lesser included offenses. However, what's before you right now is murder. You need to deal with that charge. You need to hand down or no bill on that charge specifically before we can then address any other lesser offenses. Now, those words were specifically words of limitation designed to control how the grand jury proceeds in its investigation on the case before it. Specifically, the grand jury, as the law very well states, the grand jury can investigate on its own suggestion. That means that if the grand jury asks for lesser included offenses, it should have been given those charges by the government. I'm sure the court has read my briefs. In those briefs, it was specific. I made specifically clear that excuse me, Your Honor. I'm a little nervous here. It was specifically clear in the briefs.
You're doing fine.
Thank you, Judge. I made it specifically clear in the arguments that the moment the prosecutor presented a case to the grand jury, it had the option on whether to present any charge it wanted to. It could present lesser-included offenses. It could present the higher offense. It can present cases or charges to the grand jury at its prerogative. However, once the grand jury has decided that they wanted to hear lesser included offenses, the prosecutor was obligated. Now, factually, and I want to revert back to what this case is about. Factually, the defendant in this case, that morning was taking his girlfriend to pick up her son. The son's father came to the car, saw the defendant inside the car, provoked an argument and provoked a fight by taking a log and banging on the actual hood of the car. The defendant got out, Mr. Bell. A fight ensued. After the fight stopped, they both drove off with the victim in pursuit. At some point, the victim died while he was driving in the car. The grand jury was unaware of how that happened. There was a knife involved. There was no evidence before the grand jury of who brought the knife to the scene. There was no evidence of the grand jury of when the victim was stabbed. And so only before it was a first-degree murder charge, the grand jury decided to ask questions specifically related to other offenses. And every time the grand jury attempted to ask a question about a specific degree, the prosecutor then kind of wiggled away from that question and basically explained to the grand jury that there is no definition for a degree. You're only here to address murder.
Mr. Wright, can I ask you to focus on general principles to try to establish a standard that would apply in this and in future cases? So first, what should trigger a prosecutor's obligation, and how does the prosecutor satisfy that obligation? So as to the first, obviously, if a grand juror were to say, I'd like an instruction about a lesser included offense, you'd say the obligation to respond on the prosecutor's part was triggered, I assume, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
What else would trigger a prosecutor's obligation?
I believe any evidence that's presented before the grand jury that would include support for probable cause on a lesser offense should actually trigger the prosecutor giving such a charge.
Even if no grand juror has raised the issue?
Even if no grand jury,
or
obviously if the grand jury has raised the issue, the state is obligated. However, if the state also presents evidence that supports a lesser offense, I believe, and this actually expands my argument that's on the papers, I believe that the state at that time is obligated also to give lesser offenses. And here's the reason why.
Would that take the fact-finding away from the Pettit jury? If jurors are going to be provided with a jury charge, the limited evidence in a grand jury proceeding, and then from that they may rule out first-degree crime and return a bill on the second degree, wouldn't that situation take away from the Pettit jury's ability to be a fact finder and decide the case on all the evidence and all the facts?
Actually, I think it doesn't, Justice. The grand jury is the conscience of the community, and it is a body set up to give the prosecutor or the state permission to proceed before a Pettit jury. So the issue of the grand jury or the actual goal of a grand jury is to stand guard between the state and the defendant who is not represented before the grand jury. It is right there, before grand jury is just a representation of the state.
The grand jury is an arm of the court.
Yes.
The grand jury is an arm of the court. They're not part of the prosecution or not part of the community. They're an arm of our court.
Yes.
So what I'm suggesting is that if that were done, as you suggest, on some evidence in the case that whatever evidence the prosecutor may have may be weak or strong as to a lesser offense, wouldn't that detract from the fact-finding function of the Pettit jury? That's the jury which decides whether there's a crime committed, what type of crime, and then enters a guilty or not guilty verdict?
Your Honor, there would be some effect if, I mean, I think in the question that you're proposing, Your Honor, is not considering the fact that the Pettit jury, their responsibility only comes to play once the grand jury decides that they're going to indict. The grand jury can indict in the face of evidence of a higher offense. They can indict on a lower offense. They can no bill on the face of the same evidence. The difference, the specific difference between a grand jury and a Pettit jury is that a Pettit jury must follow the law. And they're charged to do so. If the evidence supports a conviction for a specific offense, the Pettit jury must follow that law.
Yeah, but the grand jury merely determines whether or not there's a prima facie case. There could be a prima facie case for murder, aggravated manslaughter, and manslaughter.
Yes.
All of which would go to a jury. They're not mutually exclusive. in determining whether or not the jury should decide that, correct?
Well, if a grand jury indicts on a lesser offense as opposed to a greater offense, that greater offense is not going to go before the petty jury.
Well, that's absolutely correct. If there is no request by a grand juror and the prosecutor's evidence indicates to it that this is more likely a murder case, even though it, when it goes to a jury, a judge may charge on the lesser included. Are you saying just on a rational basis test, the prosecutor is bound, obligated to give all the lessers?
I believe that's correct in this sense, Your Honor. A lot of times, and because the threshold is probable cause, a lot of times what happens is that the state pursues an indictment on the higher offense specifically for purposes of negotiating the case away on a lower offense at another time, not because they believe that they're going to be able to prove that case at a trial. And so in that instance, they're actually using the arm of the court as a prosecutorial tool for strategy purposes on how to proceed with this case at a later date.
But if the grand jury finds enough to indict on the higher crime and hasn't asked a question about a lesser, which might have signaled perhaps confusion or some sense that it's concerned or being misled about the facts, why would we impose this independent obligation on the part of the prosecutor to have to charge all the way down the line?
Specifically because you're literally dealing with a body of citizens who are laymen. They, and for that reason, and because they're actually the conscience of the community, in the sense that with the power to be able to indict on a lower offense in the face of a greater offense, it should be them, it should be the grand jury who decides what they want to indict, at what degree.
I know you're using the term conscience of the community, but we do expect the grand jury to follow the law. It is a prima facie case. We don't expect the grand jury to engage in nullification, do we? We expect them to return an indictment. Or are you suggesting that we should recognize this theory of the grand jury being able to engage in nullification?
I'm not suggesting that at all, Justice. Nullification means that the grand jury literally no bills in the face of...
Despite the fact that there's evidence to indict, it decides, I'm the conscience of the community, I'm not going to indict. You're not suggesting
absolutely
that
not.
Is a theory of law.
Absolutely not. And I'm not suggesting that the prosecutor instruct or charge the grand jury in that respect. What I'm suggesting is that if the evidence that's presented to a grand jury encompasses lesser offenses, then the grand jury should have the option to decide which one of those offenses it's going to indict on.
But do any jurisdictions follow that rule where there's been no request or comment by a grand juror?
I believe the state, in our brief, I did not put or include any outside jurisdictions with respect to this particular issue. However, I know that the state did include in their brief, and I'm sure they're going to address that when they get to the podium, of some outside jurisdictions. One in particular, I believe, is New York. They actually hold an obligation to the state or to the people.
If a grand juror asks.
If a grand juror asks. If a grand juror does not ask, I don't think that issue was before the court. And again, that particular question was brought to me by the court, and I'm answering it based on the court's inquiry. The specific arguments in the briefs and what we stand by right now is that upon inquiry by the grand jury, the prosecutor is obligated to actually give a lesser.
But didn't the prosecutor say, if you think that there is insufficient evidence of prima facie case, that he's purposely or knowingly caused death, I can read you other statutes?
Yes.
Well, doesn't that handle the issue?
Absolutely.
They didn't come back and ask for lesser included offenses after that.
I don't believe it does, Justice. And here's the reason why. It goes back to the issue that I brought up earlier on. And let's just say for sake of what I'm about to explain to the court that there was absolutely nothing wrong with the instructions. The moment the prosecutor limits how the grand jury is going to proceed with its investigation, that is an unconstitutional limitation of their investigatory powers. So when the prosecutor says, you cannot address a lesser offense until you pass on the greater offense, they have in turn limited the investigatory powers of the grand jury.
Why isn't that consistent with the law? Because the whole idea of possibly indicting on a lesser included is if the grand jury did not find sufficient evidence to indict on knowing and purposeful murder, then it would go on to potentially look at the lesser included. The prosecutor offered them that option. Now the prosecutor didn't say, "Here are the charges, and you only reach them if you find no basis to indict on the knowing and purposeful murder." But the prosecutor let them know that there were other options if they didn't find that degree of evidence.
The problem with that is that it was the prosecutor that controlled that option. For example, if the grand jury said to the prosecutor, listen, we don't want an instruction right now on murder. We want an instruction right now on the lesser offense. The prosecutor cannot say to the grand jury, no, I'm going to give you instruction on murder, and then after I give you an instruction on murder, then you choose whether or not you want me to give you an instruction on lesser offense. And I think the issue is not the result.
Are you saying that the grand jury could say right at the beginning, well, don't bother with murder, we want to hear some other things?
That is the law. The grand jury has the power to investigate at their own suggestion. And so if the grand jury says, we don't want, the prosecutor has the prerogative to present anything they want to.
Right, but the grand jury could say to the prosecutor, don't charge, walk in and say, don't give me the charge for murder?
That's their investigative authority. They can also say, you know what, and this is an aside, prosecutor, clerk, we want you to leave for a minute. We want to talk about some things here. And when we're finished, we'll come back and get you.
No, I understand.
It's their room.
Yeah.
It is their forum as far as the investigatory part of it is concerned.
There's a difference between discussing things outside the presence of the prosecutor and directing the prosecution. Seems to me, under your suggestion, they would become judge, jury, and jailer, I suppose, for lack of a better term, because they would decide what the prosecutor could present or could not present, and then at that point, they would be controlling what the petit jury would also decide, because they wouldn't get to hear things the prosecutor may have that might sway in a full-blown trial. It would do away with a lot of the checks and balances of the system. If the grand jury could just say, here's all we want to hear, and here's all we want, and that's it.
Not necessarily, Justice. The grand jury has always been...
Go ahead, and then I'll ask my question. I'm sorry I interrupted. Go ahead. Answer that question, please.
The grand jury has always been the gatekeeper for the petit jury. The petit jury is not going to hear anything unless the grand jury indicts. And so that part of your concern, Your Honor, has been the rule since grand jury jurisprudence in this state, that the petit jury only gets a case if the grand jury decides that it's going to indict. The issue of,
But that's after an examination. Not beforehand. The way I understand what you're suggesting, they could just say, we're not hearing any evidence on murder at the outset, and that would be the end of that, and then there would only be, aggravated manslaughter or...
I'm sorry if I...
That's the way I understood it, so that's why I was...
Yeah, I didn't mean to say... If I said that they can prevent a prosecutor from presenting a case, I didn't mean to say that. What I did say is that they can control the investigatory mechanism of the case.
They can do what they want ultimately, but we're in a really theoretical realm by suggesting that the grand jury can say, hey, I don't want to hear about that murder charge. That just doesn't happen. They may want to hear more, but I've never heard of a case, and I've been around a long time, where
He's been around a long time.
A grand jury said, I don't want to hear that charge.
Well, I wasn't...
I just don't think that happens. It may be they want to hear more, that was a murder, please charge me on lesser included. And that's really the issue before us.
Yes, I only brought that up to indicate to the court that the grand jury actually has that power as an investigatory body, not to indicate that that's actually what's going to happen.
So you might not want to swing for the fences here.
Right.
You came in your written presentation and said, when the grand jury has raised this issue, the prosecutor has to respond.
Yes.
Right.
And now you've come forward, you've supplemented that by saying the prosecutor should do it even in the absence of a grand jury request as an alternate position. Maybe we stick with that. And is there anything else that you would like to add to your argument?
There's one other thing, and if the court obliged, one of the issues that the state brought up dealt with whether the question was moot.
So we have your collective arguments on that. We just wanted to address the standard today and appreciate your presentation on that.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you.
Mr. Heinzel.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you. May it please the Court. I have two or three thoughts just in the beginning, and then I'll move aside on those. There are things that are settled here. If you have a prima facie or have probable cause, the decision whether to prosecute and what charge to bring rests entirely in the prosecutor's discretion. There's no duty to instruct on mitigating defenses. That's what this court adopted when it adopted the John Hogan standard in Saavedra. And consistent with that, no court anywhere, from what I can see, has ever adopted the rule that a grand jury should always be presented with lesser included offenses when the evidence supports that. I think that's clear that that's not the law anywhere.
What if they ask for it?
If they ask for it, then we get into the standard. And that's really what's at issue here. And the question is, what is that standard? And we found the California case. There's very little law on this. I think it happens not that frequently that the grand jury asks about lesser included offenses because that's generally not their role. So I think the California Supreme Court articulated the standard correctly, and that is unless the grand jury specifically requests an instruction on a lesser included offense, the prosecutor is not required to give it. That seems to be a workable standard that calls to bear the prosecutor's responsibility as the legal advisor to the jury. It's also mindful of the fact that this is happening on the fly, and you don't have the benefit of quiet contemplation. So some measure of deference, I think, should be given to the prosecutor's response.
Did we hold grand jurors to the standard we would expect of lawyers that they have to specifically ask for a charge, or is it to be interpreted more loosely in the way the New York court has?
I think what happens is that if there is some vague comment or suggestion, which we believe this was, that they're interested in other things, then yes, they're not legal technicians. There will be times when the prosecutor needs to do more.
But you say that this one was vague. And I know we're now dealing this in a more hypothetical sense because there's been a representation. But when a grand juror, who is a layperson, not schooled in law, is talking about how about like the second degree, under those circumstances, it would seem to me the prosecutor should say, we don't have second degree, we don't have premeditation, but what we do have is something called aggravated manslaughter and manslaughter, and at least explain that to the grand jury so it'll be informed and it can make an intelligent decision. Do you have any problem with that?
Well, no, that would be one reasonable response. And I think what happened here, and I think that's what we're getting into when you talk about judicial review, because you're talking about a presentation that may be fully supported by prima facie probable cause of a murder. So now the only question is, are we going to dismiss that indictment because we're saying the prosecutor failed in his or her duty as the legal instructor to the jury? So one option would be, yes, there's aggravated manslaughter, there's reckless manslaughter. Another reasonable response would be, which was fully correct, what the prosecutor did here is, I'm going to ask you first to deliberate on murder, and then if you know Bill on murder, I'll be able to read you other charges, and then went on to explain
that's reckless. That's not really, I'm not certain that's fair to the grand jury. I'll let you know what the other charges are, not knowing what the elements are, and not permitting them to to see the whole picture. Now, of course, you're going to charge the grand jury that if there's prima facie evidence to support any of those charges, they return an indictment. I mean, it's not a high standard.
Correct. Correct. And I think the prosecutor did here give enough information, certainly, to draw the basic differentiation between what's murder and what else. I mean, we don't ask for the same full-fledged instructions to grand juries. I think the standard is, did they get the gist, or was it basically wrong, was it blatantly wrong? Those are the standards our courts have used to evaluate instructions on the law. Here, the prosecutor said, yes, there are other instructions, and they deal with a reckless state of mind. They didn't just say, there are other instructions. She described them, and in a way that I think, in and of itself, if she had just said, yeah, manslaughter is recklessly causing the death of another. Well, that's basically what she said. She didn't give the gradation on aggravated manslaughter, but the jury certainly got the gist.
So let's break it up. If a grand juror were to say, are there less serious charges that we can consider, does that trigger a response by the prosecutor?
Yes, I believe it would.
And what should the prosecutor do under those circumstances?
I believe that in those circumstances, that would be a specific request, and the prosecutor would have to say, yes, there are lesser included, and I could just read you the statutes. But, again, we're going to pursue this according to the basic structure, which we did in front of the second grand jury.
But start by providing them the information about the lessers.
You could just describe them, you know, in a very cursory way. But here, I mean, when you back up and take in context what happened in this case, here you had, before a single fact was ever made known to this grand jury, you had one grand juror seemingly asking a lot of questions about degrees and are there other degrees and how do we judge. They didn't even know anything about the case yet. So this obviously wasn't a request at that point for any lesser included offenses. Then the witness testifies, the witness leaves. Seemingly the same grand juror then says, I have a legal question. Is there such a thing as second-degree murder? Now, of course, everybody's going to hear that in the context of what went on before it. And in that response, I mean, even Judge Shanahan agreed with us that that was not a request for lesser-included offenses. It was just a clarification. And certainly the prosecutor gave him adequate information that, yes, there are other offenses, and yes, you'll consider them after you consider a no bill on murder, which is an appropriate structure, and we ask this court to say so. Otherwise, you're just having things sort of like handled willy-nilly in a chaotic fashion. I think to allow for consistency and,
By telling the grand jury that you have to consider the higher crime here, murder, before you can consider those other ones, does that have the capacity, though, to mislead the grand jury in its analysis on the higher crime?
I don't believe so, because typically if you make a presentation to a grand jury and there's no questions asked about lesser included, but they know, Bill, you can then come back to them and say, well, we'd like to offer you this lesser charge then.
I'm putting aside, Mr. Heinzel, the situation where the jury doesn't say anything, so there's no clue to the prosecutor that there's a question or a comment in the juror's mind. But once they've actually expressed it, however imperfectly, isn't there an obligation then to give that additional information and not tell you can't consider it until you first go up or down on the murder charge? Because that's what I'm hearing you tell me.
What I'm saying is, in this context, the response was, I think it was spot on, is that there wasn't a specific request. If there is a specific request, a specific answer should be given. But when they're just sort of generally, you know, is there such a thing? Yes, there is such a thing, but we're here to present you with a murder charge, and if you deliberate and find that there's insufficient probable cause, then we'll give you these other charges, which are all characterized by a reckless state of mind, which kind of speaks for itself, and grand jurors can appreciate that.
Why should the grand jury, provided they make their request and there's a rational basis for murder, aggravated manslaughter, and manslaughter, be charged on all three based upon the request, and then be told if there is prima facie evidence to support any of those charges, murder, aggravated manslaughter, you can... you should be returning an indictment for the murder, the aggravated manslaughter, manslaughter. Simple as that. What? You have any problem with that approach?
I think what you're saying is if they specifically request it, then you can give all three.
There is a request.
Yeah, but I do think they should deliberate in the same structure that we ask petit juries do.
Elaborate on that and talk to us about the model charge as well.
Yeah, the model charge and what this court has said is the way juries are supposed to deliberate on lesser to greater to lesser is first consider the greater. If you find insufficient of the greater, then consider the lesser.
There's one difference. When it goes to the jury, it's mutually exclusive. That's not the case when it's before the grand jury. It's a very low threshold to support. When a jury finds either murder or aggravated manslaughter, it is excluding the other possibilities. And that's the reason why I don't think the comparison works by looking at how a petit jury operates and how a grand jury should be operating. Go ahead.
Well, what I think is you can still say to the grand jury, I would first request that you consider murder. Vote on that. I would then request that you consider aggravated manslaughter. Vote on that. And I would then request that you consider, I think there does need to be a structure.
Could you finish what you were talking about with the model charge?
Yeah, the model charge, which is sort of the approach that we took with the second grand jury, is that they would first deliberate on murder. If they found insufficient probable cause for murder, they would then vote on aggravated manslaughter. If they then found insufficient probable cause on aggravated manslaughter, then they would go to reckless manslaughter. So what I think I understand you're saying, Justice Albin, is give them all three and let them vote on all three.
If that's what they want. Because unlike when the case goes to the jury, the charges aren't mutually exclusive. The question is, what is going to be preferred to the petit jury, ultimately?
Yeah, and I still think our approach is best because it informs them of everything. If you do have a specific request, these are the charges. Because the one is subsumed within the other, the petit jury is going to be able to evaluate all these things, ultimately, after a full-blown evidential presentation is made. I think part of the problem with certainly the approach that was being offered here today is that if you're going to require lesser included offenses, and I'm getting the sense that the court isn't really going to go to that breadth, is that really opens the door for requiring a much broader evidentiary presentation in the grand jury than is typically done. It's just a fact. Typically, we seek to present prima facie evidence. But if we know now that we're going to have to sort of like dissuade juries from considering lesser included offenses when they're not even asking, then we're going to have to make a much more fulsome presentation of the evidence, which is threatening to bog down the process.
Let's come back to the order that you have suggested as the appropriate way to proceed when a grand jury inquires. Have other states wrestled with that issue, those that have spoken generally to the question?
Not that I've seen, Your Honor. As I said, there's very little law on this.
Is there any prejudice that you can determine to the defendant if the prosecutor fails to instruct on lesser included, even if requested to do so by a grand juror?
Well, no, I don't see there's any prejudice. So this gets to the whole question of the prosecutor's duty as the legal advisor. He's supposed to be truthful and candid to the grand jury. There may be overwhelming probable cause then of the top charge. So where the prejudice is, I can't really see. And if we're talking about the remedy here is to dismiss the indictment and then require that it be all done over again, that's only supposed to be done on the clearest and plainest grounds.
Do you have to show, would there be a requirement that you show, in order to dismiss the indictment, some prejudice to the defendant? I'm trying to figure that out because lesser includeds become the subject of the charge conference when the petit jury is out. And frequently, if you have a prosecutor who wants to go all or nothing, sometimes the defense counsel says, great, It's what I want. Yeah. I don't want lesser included.
Exactly.
It would seem to me maybe that it could prejudice the defendant in that kind of scenario.
That's true. That's an excellent point.
Thank you. So how do you...
Oh, no.
So how do you... What do you have to find? What would we have to find to say we're going to dismiss the indictment under these circumstances, even if it's asked for specifically and not given?
I think it has to be the clearest and plainest grounds for a dismissal.
Which would
there
be
has
what?
To be almost like a bad faith showing on the part of the prosecutor in refusing to do this. Here, as I said, she educated the grand jury in precisely the manner that they were seeking advice.
What could, I'm asking you, I probably should ask the defense counsel. Or, what could be the bad faith when every lawyer, defense counsel, prosecutor, knows that these are the subjects that we're going to discuss right after the jury has heard all the facts?
Exactly. And then the Pettit jury, I mean, what are we going to, are we going to have to, like, present, say the grand jury says murder and ag and reckless man, but then when the facts go to trial, you've really only got a murder charge. You know, it seems you're forcing possibly a strategy on the defense that they may not want, and that's always what the courts have sort of recognized in this context, is that, yes, this is only the prosecutors in the room, and the prosecutor is trying in good faith to present evidence and a charge.
If there's no, look, when you get to the trial, if there's no support for a charge, then someone can move to dismiss. But at the grand jury stage, given the powers, the extraordinary powers, that's what we have said, possessed by the grand jury to investigate upon its own suggestion, and that's language from our case law, it would seem that we should not be in any way discouraging prosecutors from doing their duty as advisors to the grand jury and following up on suggestions when there's a rational basis for lesser included. The grand jury is an arm of the courts, not an arm of the prosecutor's office. That's all in our case law.
Well, the last part of your observation there, I do take issue with.
Which one is that?
Rational basis issue. I think
I'm using that as prima facie. As long as there's if they make a request and there is prima facie evidence to support, it would seem to me that given the powers possessed by the grand jury, that the prosecutor should, at that point, follow the will of the grand jury. No?
I think the standard should be, it's got to be clearly indicated. Again, you're talking about something that's coming on the fly. And in this court in Saavedra, again, you adopted the clearly indicated test for exculpatory defenses. And here we're talking about something that's not exculpatory at all.
But that's when there's no request. Look, we use the clearly indicated standard when, for instance, in a Pettit case where there's no request and the judge has to scour the record to find if there's some sort of basis. Here, where there is a specific request by a grand juror, and presumably the prosecutor knows the file, this doesn't seem to be the situation where the clearly indicated standard was intended to be used.
Was, and I think the reason is you can have requests from grand jurors. As is understood, they're lay people. Their requests aren't always going to be anticipated at all. Yes, you're making a very narrow presentation on the evidence that you're putting before the grand jury.
So what you're
saying... Now you can say, well, you know...
So what you're suggesting is that the charge wasn't clearly indicated, but it's supported by prima facie evidence. We're going to create this type of conflict.
No,
so there's a request, there's prima facie, but it doesn't meet the clearly indicated standard. You're going to say under those circumstances, there shouldn't be a charge given to the grand jury?
I think what we're talking about is the prosecutor's affirmative duty at that point to point out additional charges that they may consider. And I think it's got to be fairly obvious from the facts that have been presented that that would be a sustainable charge. And not have somebody later down the road say, hey, you know, I can construct this scenario that may create a prima facie showing of some other crime. You should have given that as well. then we're going to have indictments put under challenge in a way that's unreasonable from where the prosecutor stood in front of the grand jury.
But in this situation, in this case, as it played out, the presentation of evidence that would support potentially an indictment, finding probable cause, an indictment on knowing and purposeful murder, is not going to be so different from the prima facie evidence that's going to potentially support an indictment on aggravated manslaughter or reckless manslaughter. I mean, it's not like you have
that's
to bring
true.
In a different witness, right?
Correct.
You bring in this scenario, maybe the other cases would be different, but you bring in the detective, and the detective tells the story and describes, obviously not with the same detail that would go on at trial, but describes the facts of the case. You're not going to be caught if the jury asks for a lesser included charge. You're not going to be caught with, oh my gosh, I would have brought in three or four different witnesses to show recklessness, for example.
In this case, that's true. There may be other cases, and it seems that the court is getting ready to, or in the position to maybe fashion a very broad rule here that might apply to all crimes, you know, as far as like when we have to charge lesser included, some may involve additional witnesses or other evidence, things like that. So I think there does need to be some sort of reining in on what a prosecutor can reasonably be expected to do under the circumstances.
So in theoretically a different case, I'm just maybe a theft as a lesser included offense of robbery or something like that, where there is something additional that might be needed, in at least in some settings, what should the prosecutor be able to do? The first degree is the focus. The first degree is the charge. There's a request by the grand jury for lesser included. Should the prosecutor be able to then just bring in another witness if needed?
I think if he has to, but I also think the prosecutor can also ask the grand jury. If this is coming from one grand juror, and having sat through several presentations, they know, hey, all I have to do is ask, and boom, it's got to happen. I think at some point the prosecutor can say to the grand jury, look, I'll be happy to instruct you on lesser included offenses if that's what the body wants, because the body speaks as the conscience, not just one individual who may be sort of like, you know, getting into the role of playing sort of like a private investigator here.
But in a jury question setting with a Pettit jury, you would not, the court would not say, wait a minute, are you speaking for everybody or not? That's the court would, if there's a jury question, court doesn't generally inquire as to, does everybody think this is a valid question or is this just one person?
No, because the questions come from the jury in the Pettit jury section,
right.
In the Pettit jury context. Here, there's a dialogue between the prosecutor and the individual members of the grand jury. So it's quite different.
Other questions? Anything you'd like to add?
That's it, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. Thank you to both counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Court is in recess till 1 o'clock.